Okay, well,
let's see what's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they
stayed
in the exact same spot the whole time. They're
out there,
like I say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. All right,
Lisa,
are you ready for this?
My cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good night. Welcome to our listeners around the world. On the big stick here in Toronto, out of Montreal, on the web, and on the podcast. It's good to have you along tonight. This is edition 417 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced, UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Tonight, Dave Frelott with his take on it, our East Coast correspondent Don Ledger, abductee activist John Velez, and taking us home tonight, Alfred Lemberg. An interesting story breaking in the last 24 hours or so. This takes a little listening to, so loan me your ears and your mind and don't go wandering off. Undisclosed government sources have confirmed to the private intelligence report StarDreamResearch.com that the FBI has been apprised of concerns over a possible national security breach in the U.S. involving former government intelligence officers. An ongoing investigation by the Online Investigative Report revealed that in late August of this year, three agents of the Washington Bureau of the FBI met with an undisclosed party and discussed a UFO tale involving several former and present government intelligence officers. Following this meeting, concerns were raised that secure government vaults may have been breached at a United States Air Force base and Los Alamos National Laboratory, under the guise of a harmless UFO investigation. Previously, concerns have been raised that sensitive or classified material was passed in a series of counterfeit government UFO documents. One government source suggested that counterintelligence information targeted at the KGB had been publicly released within some of the documents. A prior investigation by the FBI had concluded that the documents were bogus. StarStream Research first learned of the renewed interest in the bogus documents from a regular contributor to the online report, following an ongoing contact with a high-ranking U.S. government intelligence officer. An amicable meeting with the officer and his wife in Washington, D.C., later took on a bizarre twist when the StarStream Research contributor was accused of asking inappropriate questions about a sensitive operation, resulting in cancellation of previously scheduled meetings with a former United States Air Force counterintelligence officer at the center of the UFO tale. Gary Beckham, the founder of StarStream Research, commented, "It does appear that SSR may have bumped into a counterintelligence operation during the course of their investigation. Although their focus has been on documented government interest in unusual phenomena for intelligence gathering, SSR suspects the use of phenomenology for intelligence may be closely tied to real cloak and dagger activities, both past and present. It's now known that the CIA previously welcomed UFO reports as a convenient cover for real-life spy plane flyovers. One theory is that intelligence operations continue to infiltrate the worldwide network of phenomenologists and encourage their activities for a similar purpose. It's also suspected that other governments have similar networks in place, and that may be the source of the ongoing concern over the UFO material. According to Gary Beckham, there's been lots of finger-pointing involved, and that is what appears to have led to FBI involvement. More than likely as part of a normal clearance review procedure. Yes, these are strange days indeed.
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Furlock.
A few things caught my attention on the UFO updates list this past week, but my time is limited, so I'm going to focus on only two of the threads that I picked up on. One, posted by Greg Boone, is entitled Ufology Mentalities. And basically, it's a list of things that sets Greg's teeth on edge concerning ufology. Now, although I agree with everything Greg posted, it would appear that he should have titled the piece Etology Mentalities, because it focused on the alien or extraterrestrial aspect of ufology. I think the biggest problem that Greg has is with some ufologists that are saying things that, well, let's just say they tax our ability to believe what they're telling us. For example, we have a few ufologists that claim they were and are being abducted. Well, okay, maybe that's not the right term, since they kind of seem to invite these visitations. In any case, they go aboard a spacecraft, and then they are whisked away to partake in some interplanetary board meeting where they represent Earth, and they're given messages and details of things that they are supposed to pass along to the rest of us unwashed masses. They, of course, come back and rush right out to tell everyone they can of the important message they've been given. And Greg has a problem with this. I think his problem stems from the fact that these extraterrestrials are flitting hundreds or thousands of light years through space, and when they get here, they just pick up the first person they happen to come across. And then they whine and they dine them and they congratulate them on being the spokesperson for Earth, and it seems they couldn't figure out how a cell phone works. Or for that matter, they couldn't get the right driving directions from MapQuest to land at the United Nations building in New York. But luckily for us, they just happened to have chosen a Brazilian farmer and a retired French race car driver, just to name a couple, to pass information along to the 6 billion inhabitants of this planet. Now, Greg has a problem with this because he just doesn't believe these people. I'm with you on this one, Greg. I don't believe a word that comes out of either Senor Oliveira's or Rael's mouth. If the message is so very important to all of us, I'm sure E.T. could link up with someone to get it on the evening news. Now, I've given up on believing when someone claims to be an alien, when someone claims to be going aboard alien spacecraft for interplanetary meetings, and when someone claims to be able to mentally contact some alien brother at will. I also don't believe anyone that tells me they can vector in spaceships by using flashlights either. If E.T. is smart enough to get here, then he better be smart enough to be able to set up an account with one of the cellular providers and get himself a phone. This time, it's not E.T. phone home. It's E.T. call the President of the United Nations. And that's only one small part of Greg's list. But I want to just speak about another thread that caught my attention. And the thread begins with the FBI told of national security issue buried in UFO tail. Now, on this one, it appears that the report of a UFO and the resulting investigation caused a little bit of a panic because some details of the UFO report related to issues of national security. Now, things like intelligence agencies actually enjoy having UFO reports generated because it covers up when spy planes are spotted. Now, I have a tiny problem with this. It would seem that the FBI would like us to believe that all reports of UFOs that came from other countries might have been sightings of spy planes? Okay. First, I understood that spy planes were designed to fly high in the sky. And basically, if you were capable of seeing one, it would be so high up that it would only appear as a speck to the naked eye. Secondly, if that is no longer true, does it mean that spy planes are now being designed to look like alien spacecraft? But here's the question that really strikes home. Does this mean that intelligence gathering agencies are gathering intelligence on domestic situations? Or are we seeing spy planes that come from other countries? Okay, enough's enough. Maybe we can get one of these guys who say they're in contact with ET to pass along a message. We need to see some kind of visible identification on all the ET spaceships from now on so we don't mistakenly identify them for a spy plane. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Days, indeed.
You can work for the Disclosure Project. They're looking for an events coordinator.
Hey, well, there we go.
But you have to have taken in a vectoring in course first.
Oh, rats. I hate when that happens.
It's been an interesting week on UFO updates this week. Some interesting threads going on. I like the discussion between Don Ledger and Eugene Frisson.
That one is going to go on for a very long time.
Yeah, unless the moderator gets bored and steps in.
That thread is just going to go on ad infinitum.
If you go to virtuallystrange.net, you'll see a link to UFO updates right on the front page there. We're just coming up, I think, for 67,000, almost 68,000 messages in the archive there.
Wow.
Wow is the right word. Yes, 10 years online.
Well, that basically means that if somebody starts reading it now,
yes.
Oh, boy.
they won't be finished by next Thursday.
Oh, no. I don't think so.
No.
No.
It's quite interesting. Always get the newbies who come along now and ask questions that have been covered many times in the archive.
That's been going on forever. We always get Roswell. We get the alien autopsy.
Is there a connection between UFOs and crop circles?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always a good one, too. What's happening with cattle mutilations? Yeah, okay.
If I were not having to read everything that goes out on it, I would definitely subscribe. And
oh, yeah.
The news and the information is really, really good. Some of the discussion, well, it gets a little pedantic. It's always a learning experience going through what's on there.
The big key is there are actual facts that are on that list.
Yes.
And those facts are not disputable.
And the investigators who investigated the cases are on the list, too.
Exactly.
And always happy to answer sensible questions.
Yeah. Keyword there, sensible.
Yes.
I must admit, I had fun reading Greg's bit about mentalities. That was cute. Some of the stuff he picked on was just sort of like, yeah.
Although what I find with Greg is he likes to leap in, ask a question, drop a bomb, and then leave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then sit back and draw cartoons of what it is that's going on the list. Greg Boone, a cartoonist. And a descendant of Dan'l Boone, too.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Knows some pretty amazing people. Names that he has dropped and positions that he has dropped on the list over the years.
A lot of the times you see the people on the list and you sort of go, yeah, okay, I know who you are. And then you find out something about that particular person and you go, excuse me? Say what?
Once again, let me suggest to listeners, point your machine at virtuallystrange.net and click UFO updates. Go read some stuff. I mean, even if you just read the stuff that's bolded, that's all the new posts, mm-hmm. and you don't follow the rees, the ongoing discussion threads, as they're called. Dave Furlott, thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you.
Good night, Dave Furlott. We'll talk to you next week.
For sure.
Good night.
Good night.
Once every 4 weeks, we head down east, and East Coast correspondent Don Ledger is living outside Halifax, Nova Scotia. He's a pilot. He's a Canadian representative of NARCAP, National Aviation Reporting Center for Anomalous Phenomena. Good evening, Don Ledger.
Good evening, Earl. That's run by Dick Haynes, Dr. Richard Haynes, actually. He's retired from NASA. He's been looking after this thing for some time now, and collating pilot reports.
And they much prefer to call it phenomena.
Yeah, phenomena, UAP, well, because of the
stigma of the word UFO, flying saucer, yep.
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And but what they do is they take pilot reports, which I do in Canada, for pilots that would like to report these things, get them off their chest, but at the same time don't want it to become public. They're assigned a case file number, and that's all that ever gets mm-hmm. up there. Their names are kept secret. Well, a little I can understand now, there's actually some concerns with airlines that pilots reporting UFOs might just be adding to the load they've got on their shoulders now with terrorism and the elimination of certain airlines and security problems, and they don't need another thing that might scare away passengers. So they're asked not to talk about them or even report them, I guess.
I can understand tens of thousands of passengers are flying every day worried about UFOs.
Yeah, whether they're getting close to an aircraft. They've got enough problems as it is, I guess. So.
Oh, yeah, well, let's ignore them. Let's not report them.
Yeah,
that'll
yeah.
stop them getting close to the aircraft, won't it? There's good, logical, strong thinking, right?
Doesn't that segue nicely into the Bethune thing?
Graham Bethune, sadly, former United States Navy commander. Died this week. He was one of the Disclosure Project witnesses. Back almost exactly 5 years ago, he was on this program along with George Filer. They were in town doing the Disclosure Doug and Pony Show.
Yeah.
And a lovely man. His story is really interesting. We should let Graham Bethune tell his story his way.
My name is Graham Bethune. I'm a retired Navy commander, pilot, had a top secret clearance. 50 years ago, February the 10th, 1951, I was flying from Keflavik, Iceland to Argentia, Newfoundland. It was at night. It was dark. About 300 miles outside of Argentia, I saw a glow on the water, like approaching a city at night. As we approached this glow, it turned to a monstrous circle of white lights on the water. We watched this for a while. The lights went out. There was nothing on the water. Next thing we saw was a yellow halo, small, much smaller than whatever it was launched from. And that was 15 miles away up to our altitude. Because of the trajectory, I disengaged the autopilot, shoved the nose over to try to go under this thing. At that time, I heard a noise underneath. I thought maybe it hit us. It was actually some of the crew members ducking, and they collided, and a couple of them were injured. Then it appeared over to the right and moved out slowly and flew with us. It was still not at our altitude, but we could see the shape of it. It had a dome. We could see the coronal discharge. I went back aft, let the other pilot, Al Jones, take my seat to see what the passenger's reaction was. Came back to the cockpit, told him not to report anything, simply because what that psychiatrist had said to maybe they would lock us up. So basically, the instruments in the cockpit, we had four or five failures in the area of magnetic compass, you know, the electromagnetic effect, in the area of directional finders and this type of thing. The craft was tracked by radar in excess of 1,800 miles an hour. It never did get to our altitude. We had 31 passengers, plus the psychiatrist and the crew members, that all sighted this at different areas. When we landed at Argentia, Newfoundland, we were interrogated by the Air Force, an excellent interrogation, Captain Paulson. When we landed at the Naval Air Test Center here at Patuxent River, we were required by Navy Intelligence to make out individual reports. Out of the National Archives, I have the 18-page official Navy and Air Force report. I've made up a report to straighten out all the truth. There's a stack of books out there this high that have written all of this up. So the truth is here. I will testify under oath before Congress that everything that I have said is true.
The late Commander, retired United States Navy, Graham Bethune, speaking at the Disclosure Press Conference in May of 2000. He passed away this week. We keep losing these older witnesses and the credible ones. That's quite an amazing experience, and this goes back to 1951.
Yeah.
In the days when flight across the Atlantic was pretty precarious anyway, really. Yeah.
This was a C-54 or a DC-4 Skymaster, the passenger version of that. And even though it was a four-engine aircraft, coming across the Atlantic Oceans, it wasn't an everyday occurrence, but it wasn't 400 or 500 or 600 aircraft coming and going like the way they are nowadays. It was an adventure still, you know. Quite frankly, I think the passengers had a lot of nerve to take that trip even back in 1951 with a four-engine aircraft. You're 25 or 30 or 40 miles off Newfoundland, and you're heading in towards Newfoundland, and all of a sudden this thing comes at you, and it's whirling around your airplane. You have no idea what it is or what it's up to or what it's going to do. Is it going to collide with you? And you've got the North Atlantic down there in February. You can imagine how cold that would be. You go into the water there, unless you're in a life raft, you're dead in 5 minutes. So you've got all this stuff going through your head. The pilot, he never mentioned there was that just about everybody on that aircraft, other than the psychiatrist, was either a pilot or a navigator or a co-pilot of another airplane. He was bringing back relief crews from overseas. They'd left Keflavik, and then from there over to Argentia, Newfoundland, and you know, they'd make the legs, and then they refuel and so on. It's a pretty scary proposition. It's bad enough when it's over land, you know what these things are up to, but when you're out over the ocean in the North Atlantic to boot in February, you have a lot of concerns, you know.
1951, you're flying across the Atlantic, you get buzzed by a UFO, you land in Argentia, you get debriefed, you go back to your base in the States, you get debriefed again. What would happen now, Don, if there was an event like that? Do you have any idea?
A lot of snoring going on. I don't think anybody would even pay attention to it anymore. I don't know about one like Graham Bethune had. Certainly most UFO reports, the ones I pick up, which are reported to ATC, are pretty much, oh, yeah, okay, that's interesting, you know, and then it's just forgotten about. Mind you, if the same occurrence had been an identifiable aircraft, one of these guys reports to ATC and it's picked up on, then there's enforcement action that goes on. Granted, this is 1951. They were under control to a certain degree, but it wasn't the kind of controlled airspace that we have nowadays. You know, where just about every square inch in the travel lanes are all covered by different sectors of air traffic control, track-ons and so on. And you have to be at a certain altitude, and there has to be so much vertical spacing between your aircraft, horizontal spacing when you're getting close to an airport where you're going to land. If you're out over the water and you're at the same altitude as another aircraft, you have to be exactly 125 miles or more ahead of that particular aircraft, slotted into your slot. You don't drop back. You don't get ahead. And if you do, they know it right off the bat because they're getting transponder codes back from the airliners. And if they see you're out of your slot, it's mentioned in daily incident reports out of air traffic control in Canada, you know, whoever they're handling.
I guess there's more danger of you being hit in an airliner by another aircraft than there apparently is being hit by a UFO.
Yeah,
and that's
so.
Perhaps the reason for them saying, well, you know, we've had so many aircraft buzzed and nobody ever got hurt, no plane got damaged. So.
Yeah, well, that's not true, though. There were aircraft that have been damaged and the pilots killed. Now, we know about Valentich, right? And
the Australian.
Because he was in contact with Moorabbin Air Base while he was out over Bass Straits, his airplane.
Tasmania.
Cessna 182, and he was in contact with flight service over there, talking to the guy, telling them this thing was maneuvering over his aircraft and making him very uncomfortable and forcing him down to lower altitudes. This guy died. Same thing happened to Torres and his passenger when they were heading from Dominican Republic over to Puerto Rico, out over the water, and this thing kept getting in their way, and he was reporting this, and he was talking to an Iberian airliner because he couldn't get San Juan International, but the naval station in Puerto Rico was recording all of this. And there's a transcript of it. And this thing kept, he said, getting in our path. And he kept turning away and eventually got lost and they never heard it from again. There's two aircraft. And then you've got the other one, Gord Heath's baby out there.
Moncla, yeah.
Yeah, the Moncla thing, that hasn't been solved yet. So how many others were there? You know, the aircraft used to go missing years ago quite often, you know, particularly out over water, never seen again. we take the position right now that really they're not a threat, but the Condon report that came out of England a little while ago that made these things out to be plasma balls, which I don't believe, but by the same token, they did say, do not try to intercept them, do not try to chase them, because they are dangerous.
But they're no threat to national security.
They're no threat to national security, no. And I was just looking at our document there a little while ago, and it pretty much says the same thing as it says in Great Britain and says in the United States.
Don, we're out of time.
Already. Well, pleasure being on.
Thank you, Don, and thanks for filling us in on some of the background around the late Commander Graham Bethune's flight.
Sad to see him go.
Yeah, sad. Good night, Don Ledger.
Good night, Errol.
Thank you. Back in 1994, John Velez began working with UFO abduction author-researcher Bud Hopkins in order to investigate and look into his own UFO sighting and UFO abduction experiences. During the 5 years that John worked with Bud Hopkins, he helped develop the Intruders Foundation web presence and accessibility for UFO abduction experiencers worldwide. He's appeared in many UFO abduction-related television and radio programs, including Nova, Kidnapped by UFOs, The Learning Channel's Where Are All the UFOs, and he's spoken publicly at many UFO-related conferences. John is an activist that works diligently at raising the public's awareness about the reality of UFOs and their occupants. Joining us on the line from his home in New York is John Velez. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Errol. Always a pleasure to spend a little time with you. Don said something very revealing and warm right before he signed off, where he said he's grateful for the time that he gets. I feel the same way. Whenever I get these opportunities to talk to the public, I make sure to come with my guns loaded and never to bring anything, you know, flip or nonsense or that's open to a lot of interpretation. It's tonight's topic that I want to touch on is what I feel makes the strongest case for the reality of the UFO abduction reports that people make. And I'm not talking about guys that Ferry mentioned, like Rael or Oliveira in South America. I'm talking about ordinary people just like myself that are family folks and have been having these weird experiences all their lives, UFO-related stuff, and have been trying to get some attention and maybe some help in some cases. But the thing that I feel makes the strongest case for that reality are the multiple witness cases. One very, very important one that everybody knows about is the Travis Walton case that involved six men, including Travis. There were five witnesses to this UFO encounter, and the fact that Travis was struck physically by some kind of a force beam or light beam that emanated from the object, and that man was gone for 5 days. Another very, very important multiple witness case is the Kathy Davis case in Intruders. Bud Hopkins wrote a book in the late 80s called Intruders, the Copley Woods Mystery. I might be misquoting that.
Yeah, title. The incredible incident at Copley
in
Woods.
Copley Woods. Mm-hmm. And the book basically covered the case of Kathy Davis. One of the incidents that the book covers is an encounter that happened at Kathy's home while her and her mother and her sister were cooking and getting a dinner prepared. The dog started barking and yelping out in the backyard. And Kathy thought that there might have been a burglar back there. So she didn't know what was going on, so she kind of instinctively grabbed the old man's shotgun and headed out to the yard to see what was spooking the dog. It was hiding underneath the truck back there, and there was a red sphere, like a UFO, was floating in her backyard over a grassy area where it left physical evidence afterwards. Kathy was taken and suffered a lot of really bad physical symptoms afterwards that anybody who knows anything about radiation sickness is familiar with the symptomology. This is what Kathy was suffering from. Her pet, her dog, died very shortly after this close encounter slash abduction from the same kinds of symptoms. The dog lost all of its hair, developed lesions all over its body, became very weak, lost the coloration in the eyes, and died as a result of this. That UFO was witnessed by two sets of neighbors. Kathy had two neighbors that faced her backyard, both of which experienced electrical phenomena, which is what drew them to see the light in the yard in the first place. Their lights went out, their TVs, the house lost power. And both of these neighbors, because Bud Hopkins made it a point to go around and interview the neighbors, reported seeing the UFO in Kathy's yard. Now, why a case like that isn't given more attention, I'll never know. People have a tendency to focus on the more easily explainable cases. And I'm talking about especially people in the research community have a tendency to treat these cases like Quakers. They call it shunning. They make believe it isn't there. But the evidence is deep and profound in this case. There's physical evidence on Kathy. A pet died. There was ground trace evidence here where the grass was scorched in a circular area. And after analysis, it was determined that the only way to desiccate soil to that level would be to bake it at 1,700 degrees for an hour. There's a lot of physical evidence here and independent witness corroboration, but these cases receive no attention at all.
The Debbie Jordan case, in its way, is unique, but isn't, as far as the tens of thousands of other people are concerned.
You know what it is, Al? The problem is that only one or two of those cases ever make it to the public's attention because a guy like Bud Hopkins will, you know, invest his own time and money to investigate the case thoroughly and then put together a report on it and publish it as a book. You don't get to hear about all the others. There's a guy, a fellow named Russ Hudson. He happens to be a psychologist here in New York. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Russ was involved in a multiple witness abduction shortly after he left college. When he finished college, he knocked around with a band for a while. He was a musician. And while they were touring down south, they were in a hotel room one night getting ready for the gig, and Russ said that he was looking in the mirror, just combing his hair, when he saw a light come from behind him where the door was, and this light just flooded into the room. This typical gray alien floated in, came up right behind him, and took him out of the room. Russ said as he was being pulled out of the room by this thing that he could see the faces on his bandmates and that one guy was trying to form the words, "Oh, my God," and didn't finish getting it out because they appeared to be, like, frozen. But what followed was a typical abduction event. You know, he was examined on board and then he was returned and all of that. These other guys remember that vividly, were frightened to death by it, never knew what to make of it. There's four witnesses to some strange non-human entity thing coming into a hotel room, removing one of the occupants. The guy goes missing for I don't know how many hours. These guys are left there in stasis of some kind. I think they were put to sleep.
And no screen memory.
And no screen memories at all. They remember seeing the light, this thing come in the room and take Russ with them. They don't remember anything after that. I developed a relationship with Russ. We became friends. We socialized with each other, and I had occasion to meet some of his friends, and two of which were these old college buddies that corroborated his report. There's case after case after case like that in Bud Hopkins' files and David Jacobs' files, John Max, I'm sure, and Ray Fowler and others. Ray Fowler has the Allagash 4 case where you have four people being abducted at the exact same time. One, in all fairness and honesty, who has recanted his story since then and claims that he doesn't know what happened. For the last 20 years or so, they all four of them corroborated the same story. And this happens time and time again where multiple individuals are involved and there's physical evidence and there's stuff that can be investigated and researched and looked at. And it's almost a phenomena in itself how it's ignored. I mean, I don't know, Errol. I mean, am I seeing something that's not there? I get the feeling that the most challenging aspect of the UFO phenomenon is alien abduction. But because of that fact, it deserves even more intense investigation and research than maybe another aspect of the UFO phenomenon. But in fact, you know, the opposite is true.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of interest in a lot of the cases that you have mentioned and most of the cases that you haven't. And it's really amazing that we don't want to know about it. UFOs are spooky enough without the occupants doing things to people down here.
Yeah. Bottom line is that it only takes one of us to be telling the truth to make this whole thing worthy of everyone's attention. And that, in fact, what's being reported is first contact, and it's being ignored.
Indeed. John, we're out of time again.
Let me paraphrase, Don. I'm deeply grateful for the opportunity and the time, Errol. I really do appreciate it.
It's a pleasure having you on, John. Not a particularly pleasant topic of discussion. Nonetheless, it's good to have you on, and it's good to be able to give you the airtime to be able to talk about the things that you and many, many other people have been through.
Oh, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Couple of weeks, John. Thank you.
Take care.
Good night. Oh, my. It's freaky stuff. There is an interesting story out of Buckingham Palace this past week. Prince William is the newest member of the royal family to become interested in ETs and UFOs, keeping alive a family precedent started back in the 1950s by his grandfather, Prince Philip, a serious UFO believer, and continued by William's father, Prince Charles, who apparently had his airplane buzzed by a mysterious UFO in 1986, raising many royal eyebrows. Prince William, the young heir to the British throne and Princess Diana's oldest son, is said to be starstruck by Michael C. Luckman's controversial book, Alien Rock, The Rock and Roll Extraterrestrial Connection, featuring many British rock stars from the Beatles and the Rolling Stones to his close friend Sir Elton John. Wills is getting into this too. Well, maybe as he gets a little older, maybe he'll have some influence on what gets looked into and what gets discussed much more openly and much more publicly. We shall see. And every 2 weeks or so, we go back to south of the border. We seem to go south of the border a lot, actually. But we go down to Alabama, wherein dwell the multi-talented, multifaceted, multicolored Alfred Lemberg.
The multicolored?
Yeah.
Whenever I talk about, they ask me what my race is on a forum, I always either write in or select other.
That doesn't surprise me. When I say multicolored, I'm thinking much more of your website than the appearance of your physical presence.
Ah, of course.
So, Alfred Lemberg, what has been going on in the world of Lemberg over the last couple of 3 weeks?
Actually, it has been that long, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Some pretty startling things have kind of come up vis-a-vis what you were talking about this evening. You know, there's a dovetail in there. There's some synchronicity. You were talking about Prince William and his newfound burgeoning interest in the ufological and what have you.
Yes.
And how he dovetails that into the alien rock angle, you know, with everybody from Elton John to the Beatles, some of the Beatles being involved with ufology and UFOs and abduction and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it turns out, I've been corresponding with Dave Davies of
the Kinks.
Of the Kinks, yes. Right. And what was really kind of interesting about that was that he was kind of seminal there in the late 60s when the Kinks were part of that British musical invasion of the United States. He was right there at the taproot of where, you know, a lot of my liberalism, my awakening to the fact that the world was a little bit bigger than was being taught to me in my high school. It's really kind of interesting talking with him and shooting emails back and forth. It's almost a little bit like talking to one of the Beatles. Mr. Davies has an interest in the ufological, but I believe that there is some kind of abduction angle going on there. And the thing with Mr. Davies is you kind of are prone to parse some of his musical efforts. Since then, especially one called There's a Bug in My Brain. And I'll tell you what, there's a couple of them there. There's Bug in My Brain and kind of an antithesis to a Bug in My Brain, kind of alluding to a cure for same. people ought to tune up their iTunes or whatever and go over there and have a look at Dave Davies and Bug in My Brain, and I think they'll probably be as startled as I am. But the point is that I think I'm going to be able to interview him for a story, and I'm looking forward to talking to him in depth.
That'll be an interesting to read.
I really hope Prince William...
Tired of waiting for you.
Oh, yeah, one and Girl, You Really Got Me.
Well, yeah, but I'm so tired. It's kind of like waiting for the guys to come out of the skies.
Yeah, waiting for the truth. At any rate, I hope Prince William does this intelligently and talks to a few...
I don't know that it was Prince Philip. I think it was much more Prince Philip's uncle, Earl Mountbatten, who was murdered by the IRA back a couple of decades ago, who was much more into it, I think, than Prince Philip.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, interesting that he would get knocked off that way then, isn't it?
It was tragic. He was just a lovely, lovely man.
Would appear, and it would seem, especially the way it was kind of discussed and the way he was kind of describing his interest in this, what little I could garner from what was being said about it, there might be an exopolitical angle if we're operating in such a way as to get the boys from topside to come down here and have a talk with us. Oh, which brings me up to an interesting thing. When you were talking with Dave Frelott, and there was some discussion about Take Me to Your Leader, that the aliens would be interested in coming down here and talking to someone in a leadership position.
Hmm.
You know, like, let's give him the present leader of the free world. Okay, so we want the aliens from space to come down and have a face-to-face and a heart-to-heart with George W. Bush.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that does hurt you somewhere low in the back there, you know, like it does me. It's really astonishing. But the point is, maybe the aliens would be a little bit more interested, given anything else that they have for talking opportunities, like rock and roll stars or race car drivers or even Swiss farmers, you know?
Yeah, anybody they come down and talk to, short of talking to the masses and being able to convince the masses in the way that the Fatima apparitions that happened in Portugal all those years ago, when mm-hmm. tens of thousands of people saw what they thought was the Virgin Mary. Short of coming down and doing a sell job like that, it's going to be real hard. It doesn't matter who they go and talk to. Whoever they talk to, once those people open their mouths and say, look, the aliens came to visit me. Yeah, quick, put on this nice leather jacket backwards.
Well, it occurs to me, especially with regard to Fatima, that I think being visited by the Virgin Mary was the seed of its dismissal and its destruction as a real story. Because
uh-huh.
I think if the real story had been, looked an awful lot like a UFO to me, I think it would have been a different story.
From the descriptions given at the time and written up, the clouds, the way they roiled and boiled, was exactly as in Spielberg's movie, Close Encounters. And then the bright light appearing. How do people back in the early 1900s describe what it is that they're seeing, especially with the religious fervor that there was around their lives at the time?
Yeah, and what they were there for in the first place anyway.
Exactly.
But still, you know, you're spot on when you say that everybody's description is of a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you know, like we're going to have to ask the Virgin Mary to take a bye, with all respect to the Virgin Mary.
And who knows, maybe she ran into an extraterrestrial as well, and a virgin mother in a virgin birth.
And so the story goes.
And so the story goes. And that's a story I'm going to stick to. Did you catch the story that I read right at the top of the program tonight, Alfred?
Yes.
What I thought was really interesting about it was that it confirmed the fact that there have been many instances in the past where what people have thought have been UFOs, reports of UFOs, observations of UFOs, weren't UFOs at all. They were being set up by American intelligence services. When you discover that in the paperwork that has been released,
right,
there are secrets in there that didn't need to be released, and somehow they became jumbled together. Yeah, right, somehow.
Right.
What it does is it confirms that there are things being hidden behind what ostensibly are UFO sightings, UFO reports.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a large part of, hey, they're not really UFOs, they're special little projects and secrets that we don't want to talk about, is another dodge, because you and I both know that the UFOs are there to begin with. So anything that they say that tries to counter that or tries to back away from that, especially given how they have entirely botched from the very beginning, you know, with their time compressions and their Roswell didn't really happen, it happened, it didn't really happen, it happened, it was mogul balloons. It wasn't mogul balloons, it was dummies. They're just crazy stuff that I don't even waste time listening to it anymore. But what strikes me about it is that by their own admission and by their own publicity and maintenance forever has been that there are no UFOs. And what is there being taken for UFOs is not a threat to national security, and that no credible proof of UFOs exists anyway. So why then is there all this worry about their discussion from persons who have been in government and witnessed them, not the least of which was when you were talking to Don Ledger this evening, when you were talking about Lieutenant Commander Bethune? And very interesting story, you know, when we're talking about 1951, I think that was probably just prior to the shoot-down order that was in place in, I believe, early 1952 and right on up through 1954, and this shoot-down order of American military planes to shoot down UFOs if they wouldn't land upon direction,
yeah.
Which always kills me. We want you fellows to land right over here. You know, I mean, just complete and absolute craziness. The point being that here's this fellow out there, you know, and is willing to swear, and unfortunately he's gone, like you say, but willing to swear, you know, on the stack of proverbial Bibles that what's happening is happening, and we should be paying some kind of attention to it. And
he and 31 passengers and a psychiatrist.
Well, yeah, and the guys that were kind of bounced around ended up getting injured and hurt and what have you. Just complete and absolute craziness. You couple that with, okay, there are no UFOs, remember, but then, you know, he has to be debriefed numerous times every time he makes a stop. Again, the question is begged, just how long can all of these reports go on? How long can this keep happening? How long can good people keep coming forth and disclosing quality information before we find out what's going on?
It's been almost 70 years now.
Yeah.
We've gone this far.
Yeah.
Why not go further? Although there are people who keep whispering in my ear when I'm on the phone, who keep saying, something's going to happen soon. I've got this feeling.
Well, and that's been the report of Bill Burns and the staff over at UFO Magazine, that something is afoot, and there may be a major disclosure here pretty soon. You know, we can just wait and see, you know. This could be another one of those lost leaders that we're always getting tantalized and teased with.
Well, Stephen Bassett will finally be right if that happens.
A lot stranger things than that have happened.
Yes.
You know, with all respect to our good friend, Mr. Bassett.
He's been predicting something's about to happen ever since this program's been going, I think.
You probably knew that back in the late 50s yourself, didn't you, Aaron?
What, something was going to happen?
Yeah.
Is about to happen? Yeah. Yeah. And all that happens to me is I get another year older waiting for it.
The point is that it is going to happen, and I think it's going to happen in our lifetimes. You know, there's this acceleration that I'm always on about. There's this movement towards a concrescence where all the technologies are burgeoning into hyperspace at the speed of light, and things are really getting crazy. Oh, man, from nanotechnology to medical technologies to computer technologies, man, things are happening quicker and quicker and quicker.
And the planet is dying and dying and dying just the way the contactees were told it would happen unless we smartened up.
Well, true, but then Terrence McKenna talks about this forward escape that we can utilize, given that there's no turning around and saving the planet now, that we must use our technology to accelerate right into the jaws of it and get out of it that way.
And then head for Mars.
Head for all the near-Earth asteroids.
Yeah, those of us that remain. Although what's going to be on those asteroids, I have no idea. They're certainly not conducive to the way we like to stay alive.
True, but I think if we pack the centers of those things with ice and we heat them up with solar energy from big mirrors that we have out there, mm-hmm. we could blow our homes up like soap bubbles.
That'd be interesting.
I've read some things where that's been postulated, and, you know, it could work. We have a lot more to look forward to than we have to be fearful of, I think. And I think the boys topside kind of understand that, and they're waiting for us to come to ourselves.
Yes. Wouldn't hold my breath.
Well, I'm not going to hold my breath. You know, if I held my breath, I wouldn't be able to breathe, and I would pass out after a while, and that wouldn't be very good for anybody, and certainly wouldn't impress the boys topside, I would imagine.
You have several functions to perform before you go holding your breath, it would appear.
How much more time do we have, Earl?
We have about a minute and 10.
Oh, cool. I have been nominated over at Paul Kimball's blog for UFO Paranormal Troublemaker, you know, the Zorby 2006 award. I was wondering if you had any input on what he meant by troublemaker.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's myself and Nick Redfern,
mm-hmm.
and that fellow named Arthur, who shall remain nameless.
Are you looking forward to winning that award?
Well, I would like some input on what troublemaker meant, first of all.
Well, I guess perhaps the fact that there appeared to be some difficulty in understanding between the two of you.
But there's difficulty in understanding between he and Nick Redfern. I thought they were boon buddies.
Well, they are. But I think it's all done with a certain degree of grin, you know, and tongue-in-cheek. We have
Canadian
to go.
Canadian humor.
There, yeah, exactly. Humor.
Humor. Let me get this in.
Good night, Alfred Lemberg. Thank you, sir.
Auf Wiedersehen.
We shall see you next week. Thank you for being out there. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Neff. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli.